Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.
A day to give the best of me. I'm only one, but not alone. My finest day is yet unknown. I broke my heart for every gain to taste the sweet. I face the pain. I rise and fall, yet through it all, this much remains. I want one moment in time when I'm more than I thought I could.
People of the world, I am your host, GD. Welcome to Life Changers Presents on A Touch of Grace. Today's date is Thursday, the 3rd of July, and the time is 1:30 p.m. You just heard One Moment in Time, the worldwide Emmy Award-winning hit written by Albert Hammond and John Bessis, produced by Narada Michael Walden and recorded by the late icon Whitney Houston for the 1988 Summer Olympics held in Seoul, South Korea. I thought it appropriate for the interview today as we will be discussing what it takes to be great mentally, physically, and spiritually. For over 20 years, today's guest has crossed paths with some of the greatest professional athletes on the planet, introducing them to his method and powerful philosophies that have transformed not only their physical, but their spiritual prowess as well. It is an optimization transformation that enables them to reach beyond their perceived potential. Today's guest is an athlete, businessman, poet, writer, spiritual mentor, and professional trainer. Born in Chicago, he grew up in a family strong spiritually, academically, and athletically. His siblings are accomplished in their own respective achievements. Case in point, his younger brother holds American and Olympic records in the triple jump and won the gold in 1996. Pretty impressive, right? PEPA Sports, Inc. is his performance-enhancing program for professional athletes, and it incorporates his unique training philosophy. In his work with world-class athletes from Olympic medalists to NFL pros, he identified 19 characteristics common to the success of elite achievers. These 19 principles of transformation became the basis for the distinctive and rigorous training program that has become his trademark, for which he was recognized in 2003 on the cover of Wall Street Journal. The success of his PEPA Sports, Inc. inspired the founding of Training Ground, the facility he owns here in the East Bay area of California. And in this life changer life, he has just seen some incredible feats of accomplishment. He joins me today to discuss his soul-stirring endeavors that have a profound impact on the human spirit. His name is Thomas Weatherspoon, and I welcome him to A Touch of Grace. Thomas, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, JD. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good, just stumbling over my words for some reason. You know how it goes.
That's quite all right. You did a pretty good job. You're pretty good at this.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I've been doing it for 4 or 5 years. I'd better learn something, man.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're polishing it up. It sounds real good from here.
All right. Well, so how are you doing on this day before America celebrates its independence?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. In fact, I just walked out of practice so we could do this, do the interview. We're hoping to practice out in Milwaukee, outside of Milwaukee right now in Glendale, Wisconsin, at a club called Top Line, football, basketball, and track and field.
All right. Well, you know what? How special do I feel that you took time out of your busy schedule to be here on A Touch of Grace today, and you definitely are a life changer. Now, your bio left me excited to speak with you today. So for the listeners, can you take us through the early years of your life and tell us what it was like growing up in the Weatherspoon home environment?
Well, like you said, I grew up in a family of athletes. My mother's a minister, so we grew up in a very spiritual family. And everything that we did was directed and guided by the principles, probably more the Christian principles, because we grew up Baptist. So in sports, since I came up in a family of athletes, somebody was participating in something athletic almost every day, all right? Mm-hmm. My brothers and I participated in 4 sports from the time we were in 5th grade all the way through high school. And then I went on to participate in 2 sports in college. My other 2 brothers participated in 1 sport in college. All of us were All-Americans. It was just the way we were brought up, raised up. But while we were playing our games and participating in sports, my mom was in the background showing us or defining for us the principles, the spiritual principles that were taking place while we were on the court. Mm-hmm. And so maybe get upset at a loss or, you know, a, a narrow victory or something, or the way we played, and she was constantly reminding us to keep our spiritual perspective.
Okay.
So that stuck with me. It stuck with me for a long time. So as I went through my athletic career, that was pretty much my mantra, keep your spiritual perspective, keep your spiritual perspective, which meant don't look at it just from a physical point of view. So it also meant before you go participate in that sport, you should have already accomplished what you're trying to accomplish mentally and spiritually before you ever step on the field. So never neglect that aspect of your training, because that is the most important aspect of your training.
Wow. Well, I have to tell you right now, I am an avid believer that, you know, if you're right mentally and spiritually, other things that you set out to achieve seem to come natural to you. And so when you reach those rough times, you're actually able to rise above and look at it from a spiritual perspective. So your mother is a minister. What's her name?
Reverend Berta Harrison out of Milwaukee.
Reverend?
She used to, she just retired a couple years ago, but she worked at Tabernacle Baptist Church in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. So you grew up in the church, which many of us actually have. So a lot of us kind of strayed away once we got to a certain age as far as going to church and those activities within the church. So did you find yourself, did you stick with church, or did you stray away and then find your way back?
Well, you know, there was a lot of things in our church that I didn't agree with, a lot of the political stuff that I didn't agree with. And my mom and I would have discussions about it all the time. And she pretty much sent me on a quest and said, you need to go find for your own self, you know, what's right for you. So I went on this quest for years that just, you know, from all around the world. I went, one of the first places I went was Egypt, because Egypt is mentioned over 720 times in the Bible. So I said, well, I need to go to Egypt, because it's referenced so often in the Bible, I need to be on the ground, and I need to look at what was taking place at that time. I want to be there. I'm an avid studier of history. So I went on this super long quest that simply brought me right back to God. And I learned a great deal from all of my steps on that path. I learned a great deal. And what I learned most of all is that all of us in the world we live in, we're all suffering, you know, or struggling from a poor self-image. And I use that in my training with my athletes. It's because we don't recognize, we may give lip service to the fact that we are spiritual beings, but most of us think we're physical beings having a spiritual experience, not a spiritual being having a physical one. See, it's not, we're not just, we are actually spiritual beings. We're actually spiritual beings. The eternal part of you, the part that's going to last forever, so the truest part to you is that spirit. So if I can help an athlete recognize that they're just not blood, bone, and muscle, that there's a greater intelligence inside of them that's running 70 trillion cells, all having 100 million chemical responses every second, there's an intelligence and a wisdom and a power inside of them that is them. And if they could, mm-hmm. if they could tap into it, if they could realize it, if they could come to learn it as a truth, there's nothing they couldn't accomplish. So as I started in this field, that was my main goal, to introduce them to their true self so that they wouldn't have a poor self-image. See, when we just think we're all physical, all right, we run up against a lot of things in this life that can break the physical. You know, a lot of things in this life that can break a belief. You know, can shatter your faith. But when you have a knowing, when you absolutely know, like you know 2 + 2 = 4, that there's a greater intelligence, wisdom, and power inside of you, you can challenge a lot of things. You'll take a lot of things on. You'll step further than you would step prior to having that knowledge. So that's what we try to get our athletes to understand, that we're going to develop a greater self-image, because we're going to show you the true nature of yourself, and it's not just your physical abilities and your physical body. It's not that. So if you can tap into it, you can do great feats. And that's why you see athletes, they're able, like a LeBron James, will hit a zone and can't miss a shot. He's not playing that game mentally anymore. He's moved past that. He's transcended past that. He's willing his game to be. So when after the game he scored 60, 70, 80 points, they said, well, how did it feel? Well, I really didn't feel it. Well, I mean, what were you thinking? I wasn't thinking. I just knew everything I threw up was going in. And it happens in every single sport because of that repetitive nature of the sport. You do something over and over and over again, and you can go into a meditative state, and you're no longer doing it consciously, but you're doing it subconsciously. And then that greater wisdom or power takes over, and that's when you see magic in the on the field or in the arena.
So I have a question then for you. You explained that beautifully, and I really do honestly believe that when somebody is out there making that many baskets, they are in a zone. But from your perspective as a trainer, what do you think gets in the way of us connecting to our spiritual selves? You touched bases on a little bit, but I wanted to dig a little deeper.
Okay. Well, as athletes, by the time you're 18 or 19, you pretty much have a concrete idea about who you are. Physically, your capabilities, right? That's what we're always up against a challenge when I take on athletes, especially straight out of college or professional. My challenge is this athlete's walking through the door already knowing who they are. So I'm going to have to help them see that there's more to them than they than meets the eye. So that concrete image of ourselves is one of the reasons that we have a hard time tapping into our spiritual. Because when you're, especially when you're an athlete, you've grown up, and I'm going to say everyone, not just athletes, because all of life is about being athletic, because now all of life is about accomplishing something, securing something, acquiring something. You are going out to get a job. You are going out to make some money to buy a house. You are actually, you know, out there working at it, physically working at it. So what happens is when we just see ourselves as that physical body going to acquire something, that's when we battle, when we struggle because of our perspective, our perception. If I see myself as just this human being, just this physical body, which is hard to come out of because I'm so real. I can touch me. I feel me. I can think. You know I'm a solid, actual, real entity standing here. So I'm going, most people are going to go with what they can see, feel, touch. That's their reality. That unseen is a hard one to grasp if you've been coming up all your life only focusing on that one thing. The problem with only focusing on yourself as a human being is that there are some flaws that come with seeing yourself that way that create a poor self-image. One is, you know you're a physical being, and you know that one day this physical body is going to disappear, turn to dust, and you're gone. Well, if I only see myself as a physical being, then I'm naturally always afraid of that one day. Now, if I only see myself as a physical being, then I'm also insecure because I don't have any control over when that one day comes. And because I only see myself as a physical being, there's a big limit to what I can and can't do, you know? Mm-hmm. So only see yourself from that perspective, then everything you think, every dream you have, every wish you have, every desire you push for, at the foundation are those fears that come with seeing yourself as a physical being. So that I don't care how grandiose your dream is, you just brought the fear with you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why people go, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And then there's a but, or maybe, or it was, you know, something else happened because that comes with it.
Mm-hmm. What are some of, you speak of the fears. I love your perspective, and I'm going to get a lot out of this interview when I go back and listen to it, because it sounds like you are very well-versed in your understanding and belief in this spiritual type of existence. So you speak of fears. What are some of the major fears you have found common in most people?
You know, one of the number one fears, because I work with, you know, primary athletes and celebrities, one of the biggest fears is their own fear of success. It's that and from my perspective, from my work, I watch a lot of kids get to the line, right? Get right to the door of success, and create their own reasons for it not happening.
Mm.
And you can hear in their conversations up until they get to that door, you can hear them planning for how they're going to step back from the door. You can hear it in your conversation. You know, people that talk about being great, This is a common one. This is how I point out my fears to my athletes. They might say something like, "Oh yeah, you could do that, but it takes money to make money. So if you ain't got no money, you can't do nothing. You can't do this. You can't do that."
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you're like,
yeah,
"Well, that's a fear." And you just validated your fear. You're not telling me the truth, because there's plenty of poor people who become wealthy as all get out in this country.
Right.
So stop with that one. You know?
Yeah, I've heard that one a lot. It takes money to make money. So I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to know, so what are some of the methods, or what is a line of conversation that you use to help someone remove themselves from that concrete image that has manifested over time, to help them transform into a more spiritual type of existence?
You know, one of the things that we do when the kids first come in, like let's say we're going to start a camp. Let's say we start a camp today. 25 kids will come in from around the country in their prospective sports to get ready to prepare for, you know, their draft day, their workout, whatever they have to do. When those 25 kids come in, our first initial day, we talk. I tell them about my philosophy and what I want them to gather from or get from the next 6 to 8 weeks or 6 to 10 weeks that we're going to be together. And so then after I tell them about my philosophy, I have them do a little drill for me, an assignment for me. And I will hand them all a piece of paper, and I ask them to think on a feather. Everybody imagine a feather. So everybody in the group will imagine a feather. And I said, now, every single person, imagine a color to that feather. Every one of you, just imagine a color to that feather. So I'll ask them to, you know, give me their color. Somebody will say purple. Somebody will say pink. Somebody will say red. I said, okay, now write that down. What's the color of your feather? Everybody writes down the color of their feather, right? Now, to get you to begin to understand what I'm talking about on the spiritual realm, on the fact that you are creating your reality with every single thought and image you play in your head, what I want you to do is write under that the color of that feather that you will see this feather in the next 2 weeks and date it and then sign it. And I encourage them to make the colors crazy as possible, just crazy, right? And within 2 weeks, I have never not hit it. All 25 will see their feather, bring it in. Some of them are so good at manifestation that they will walk out the door and that feather will fall off the back of a truck. And then walk back in the door and say, "I just found my orange feather. Is this crazy?" I said, "Have you ever seen an orange feather before?" "No." Then it's powerful, not just crazy. See, we're all wonderful manifestors. We are all wonderful manifestors. Our spiritual side to us is at work 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. But it'll only manifest what is most prominent in your subconscious mind. But it's flawless about doing it. So most of us, because we're based in that physical belief and we bring our fears with us, most of us have some very fearful thoughts, imaginations, and images in our head. And so we have a tendency to manifest the bad stuff. Like, you can bring on some bad stuff instantly. Boom. You just start talking about something negative and have something negative happen to you, because we're very strong believers in that negative part. But we're not as strong in the positive part, because we're taught in this society, like, simple stuff, like too much of a good thing is bad for you. I hear that so much, and I go, well, what is heaven? What would heaven be like? Was there going to be some bad stuff in heaven? You got to open your understanding up to something bigger and greater than this simple physical reality. You can hit on all points. You can be super successful in every area. You can be the greatest manifester out there. You can bring into fruition whatever you desire and wish. You can do that if you're willing and courageous enough to do it. It takes courage to step into that understanding. It's like saying, look, you know, you are the child of the absolute power in the universe. But that means that you got absolute power in you. My son is always going to be a Weatherspoon. He's my son. There's no way around it. He can't get out of it. He has my genetic makeup. He's my son. So just like he's my son, you're related to the absolute power. You can't get out of it, but that absolute power is inside of you. And it's not just a bit of it. right? Because it doesn't work that way. It's like taking a drop of water out of an ocean and then saying, well, now it's something different because I took it away from the ocean. No, it's still the ocean. And if you check the properties by microscope in both bodies of water, you'll see it's still the same properties. But the beautiful thing about it is even if I separated the drop, everything that's in the ocean is in that drop. And that's the way it works with us. Everything that the absolute power has is in us.
So I have a question for you because you speak it so fluently, and I hear the conviction in your voice, and I can easily see how you can inspire someone to step outside of their own personal image that they brought with them while growing up, you know, to step into something greater than, you know, because there are a lot of people that are out on the fields and on the courts that are great, and some of them never go beyond a certain point, but then some of them reach that optimum level, like you mentioned LeBron James and, you know, Michael Jordan and these types of people. So what do you think separates them from those who just never get it?
It's a knowing. It's the difference between believing and knowing. And we live in a society where belief is taught. Now think about the advancements we have in science, mathematics, physics, right? And we're still debating. I mean, on every level, we're still in debate if the absolute power in the universe actually exists.
Mm-hmm.
So we're taught belief. And when you become great, right, it becomes a knowing. You're no longer a believer. You absolutely know that, emphatically, I'm going to be successful at this, 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 and this. And if you're with an athlete when they get to that level, my younger brother in point, when he went to the Olympics in 96, there was no doubt in his mind he was going to win that gold medal. There wasn't a blink in him. And that force that was on him because it was an absolute truth, it scared people around him. His competitors knew it when he stepped on the field. It's an energy you walk with. Everybody has an electromagnetic field, and it stretches out several feet in every direction, right? Your heart's electromagnetic field is even bigger, okay? So if you know an absolute truth in your heart, you will be touching people on the shoulder 20, 56 feet away from you when you're walking into a room or walking onto a field. They will turn and recognize you because they feel you. And that's the reality of our spiritual side. So when you move into a knowing and rather than a believing, all limits are off. All limits are off.
Yeah, and you mentioned that your mom set you off on this journey, which I think is just wonderful of your mom to actually allow you the freedom to actually go ahead and go out there as opposed to trying to stronghold you in her personal beliefs about, you know, how things should be and what a spiritual journey looks like. Because sometimes, you know, parents and grandparents and the elders can hold you captive and have you fearful of stepping outside of the box. So now, it led you to Egypt. How did that trip come about, and what was that entire experience like for you over there?
Well, the Egyptian trip came, my first trip came about, I left college and moved to California in pursuit of my track career. And when I got to California, I was already moving into the training aspect of it, and a woman came to me with, she had breast cancer, and she was battling breast cancer and asked me if I could help her to prepare herself for the surgeries and all of that stuff. So she was willing to work with me, and she wanted to bargain because she lived over in Egypt for a while. She married an Egyptian man. They went back and forth, and they actually had a tour business, and they took groups over twice a year. And so she bargained with me for the trip for training. And so she actually gave me 2 first-class tickets to Egypt.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. So I know that Egypt is a land where the religious battles that are going on over there become very, very violent. So as you embarked on that plane and you were about to take that trip over to Egypt, What were there any personal fears that you had about it? And once you landed, what was your first perception of where you were?
Well, I didn't have any fears because all of the steps that I had taken up to there to me were divinely guided, and so this was, you know, this was an answer to a wish or a want that I had when I left the state. This is what's something I wanted to do and something I was planning on doing, and this is how it showed up. See, this is one of the other things we need to understand about our ability to manifest. We will stick on a linear line of thought when we want something, but that's not the way the universe works. When you have a thought, it's like dropping a pebble in a pond. It makes a circular ripple. It goes out and it comes back. When you put your thoughts out into the universe over desires or wishes or wants, it comes back in that 360-degree circle. But if you're on one linear line of thought, like I only want Egypt to show up this way, I would just stay focused on this one linear line of thought and miss how it came up behind me. Get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it showed up in the... My wish or want came true, right? Because I was so focused and driven about doing it, it came true. But it came true through a wonderful woman who, you know, wanted to bargain with me. But that's an answer to my desire, my wish, or my want, right? So we have to be able, when we do that, we need to have our head on the swivel and be looking around for that prayer to be answered. Because it's going to be answered. That's just the science of the universe we live in. It's going to be answered. So if we stay open and focused, we'll see it show up one way or the other. But when I touched down in Egypt, I didn't have any fears whatsoever when I got there. And as we traveled the Nile, the different places, like going into Cairo, I saw the military at every hotel, the sandbags piled up outside. I was actually on a train that got stopped, and the fundamentalists pulled 75 German passengers off and executed them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but I personally never had a fear. In fact, I got off in off the boat in a Swan, and I met some really wonderful people, young brothers who were working the ships, right? And, you know, we had a kinship, and they invited me into their village to meet their people. And when I said I was going to go, the captain and everybody said, I don't think that's wise. We don't want you to leave the ship or go off into that because, you know, the Muslims are. I said, well, I have no fear of them because I recognize them and their religion, and I honor them and their religion. I don't have a fear of them at all. And so I went, and when I went, the kids who took me, when they came back, they fired the kids from the ship.
Wow.
But I had a wonderful time. They made me part of their tribe. It was beautiful. They had a great ceremony. They brought out the chickens because that's when you celebrate and you bring out the chicken. I drank a little bit too much tea and I ended up getting sick because I forgot that water still comes from the Nile even when they're making tea. But I had a wonderful experience. I had a wonderful experience.
So when you were traveling, it sounds like it was a very wonderful experience. I still can't get past that part where you said that there were some people that were executed. And by that time, I know GD. GD probably would have been, where's the American embassy at, you know? You know? And so I just admire your courage. It's just so profound. So when you were traveling through Egypt, were there any new awakenings that occurred within you as you were over in the place that is called the Holy Land?
Oh, yeah. This is Egypt, or ancient Kemet, right, is like a pilgrimage, I would think, for African Americans. I went there and my entire reality changed from the first trip. My entire reality changed because I saw things there, physical structures, hieroglyphs from side of walls that no one could explain to me. Like the first time I saw the tomb to Imhotep, and they actually had a modern-day surgery embossed on a wall that's like, you know, probably 40, 50 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually saw a modern-day surgery. They were doing brain surgery, and this picture is embossed on the wall, and there's scalpels and modern-day tools sitting there, and this is thousands of years old.
Wow.
I went, okay, somebody come over here, guy, explain this to me, please.
Right.
Excuse
right.
me? That's brain surgery they're doing. Those are scalpels. Mm-hmm. That looks like a modern-day surgery room. I mean, what are we talking about here?
Mm-hmm. He just told me they were advanced. I said, well, that's a little bit more than advanced. And I saw that everywhere. I saw it everywhere. So I had to back up. When we went to the Temple of Karnak, man, the stuff that'll blow your mind there. That'll blow your mind. They had a lake. They called it the Magic Lake. They had a lake inside this temple, which means they had a dome over it 3,000 years ago. Huh?
Wow.
We just stopped putting domes together in my lifetime. They have the biggest cranes in the world over there trying to reconstruct, you know, a lot of the temples and stuff, and we can't do it with the biggest, baddest machinery we have in the world. We can't do it. There's slabs of stone that we don't have a crane that has a great enough balance to actually pick the stone up. They're slabs of stone 80 to 100 tons laying down. So how did they pick it up? How did they put it in place? Mm-hmm. See, there was already a greater science, a greater aspect of us being expressed in the world a long time ago. A long time ago. So once you actually touch down on ground and see all of this, you have to come back and start doing your own study. Like, you know, I missed something.
Well, what do you think? Evidently, we definitely are missing something. I know that I've watched stuff on the History Channel, and I know about the pyramids and they're positioned a certain way, and you know, I know about all the tombs that are over there. And like you said, how did these people erect such colossal monument, you know, with not the modern technologies that we have here today? So what do you think? Oh, go for it.
I know they had modern technology that we have. They had technology that surpasses what we had today. See, that's the myth, that they were, you know, they had carving stones and, I mean, blades and stuff like that. That's a myth. All you have to do is go see the building and you know it's a myth. Sorry. Nobody put that together. You know, there's every slab, every brick of stone in the Great Pyramid is 3,000 pounds. Every stone is like every stone is like 3 tons. Every stone, every single one of them. But when you go inside the Great Pyramid, the King's Chamber has two humongous slabs of stone laying against each other like in a teepee, right? Making like a mini pyramid, and each one of those slabs of stone is two slabs of granite. It's 275 tons.
Wow.
Now, I've seen in the encyclopedia where 100,000 slaves were pulling brick across the sands on top of the lumber, you know, and they pull it to the site. Well, when you're there, you come to understand that the closest granite mountain of granite is 2,000 miles away. And these big slabs of stone, where were they getting the trees to pull this stuff on? Not only that, where did they get the rope? It would have took 100,000 slaves 20, 30 years to tie enough papyrus reed together to make the rope. So that didn't happen. That absolutely didn't happen. But because when man walked up on this land, they didn't have answers. They didn't know this was a wisdom greater than they had. So they just wrote down what they believed it would be, you know. And all of that's proven to be false now. See, there's a lot of archaeology out there that we don't ever get knowledge of in America. It's kept away from us. But they call it the forbidden archaeology. But when you start seeing that, when you start learning about that, when you learn that they've discovered pyramids in America, that they've discovered mummies in America, that they've discovered lots of ancient Egyptian plates, monuments, and all kind of in Central America, buried deep into the ground. When these mining companies started digging for coal, they start finding all kind of things that go date back thousands of years. So
and
it puts you on a whole nother.
Yeah, you mentioned
the forbidden.
You mentioned the forbidden. It definitely does. Yeah, you mentioned that, and I would have to say, you know, that some of us are prisoners of what we see on television and what people tell us. And it certainly sounds like you have gone beyond that to actually go ahead and find the exploration yourself, you know, and visiting a place like Egypt that goes back thousands and thousands of years. But what do you think the biggest misconception that we have over here in America about over there?
One of the biggest misconceptions is that people are different, period. No matter where I've been around the world, I've been blessed to be, you know, to be able to travel different parts of the world. And all, and what I see in the world is everybody's pretty much doing the same thing and trying to be different about it, but we're all pretty much living the same kind of existence. Yes, we have our own battles and fights and fusses amongst each other. Yes, we are, you know, just striving to raise a family and do better for our kids. You see that everywhere you go. And our problem, you know, when in America is we have a viewpoint about everybody that's fed to us through the media. So we all grow up with this viewpoint about what Muslims are like or what the Japanese are like or what Africans are like. Or, you know, we all do that. And I was no different than anybody else. It hit me dead in the face the first time I left the country, all right, that I thought like that. Like, I know who you are because I've heard about you, you know, that kind of thing. But it's not true. You know, until you get out and do your own, you know, travel and meet people and greet people. The first time I went to Egypt, I was on a tour, right? And we went to, the first thing we did was go to the Great Pyramid. Well, I'm at the Great Pyramid, and this has been a dream of mine since I was a little kid. I'm looking around. 30 minutes after we touched down, the driver said, all right, let's get in that bus. So we're ready to go. I said, ready to go? He said, yeah, we're getting ready to take you to the papyrus shop. See, all the tours will do is just take you to different shops to buy stuff, right? So you're not really going to spend a great deal of time studying anything. So when he told me that, I went, well, I'm not ready to leave. He said, if you're not on the bus in 10 minutes, we leave you. I didn't get on the bus in 10 minutes. They left me. I did the whole time the next couple of weeks by myself. But what I did is that same day, walking around the city of Cairo, of Giza, I met this brother who said, are you a newbie in American? And I said, I guess I am. He was like, brother. And he owned his own gold shop, and he took me into the shop, and he showed me all these pictures of other Americans that had been there, from presidents to, you know, CEOs, and he took pictures with them. He was really proud. His name was Adif, and then Adif just adopted me as his brother, and he took me everywhere off the tourist path. So when I showed back up at the hotel that night, I had all of the papyrus work that was done by Africans, not, you know, done by, you know, machines and stuff. I had gold, I had perfumes, all naturally done and not the fake stuff. So everybody who I was with was jealous and envious. I was like, hey, sometimes you just got to get off the beaten path. And so my brother took care of me the whole time I was there, and I made family while I was there. And that's the greatest way to learn. You know, you go into a different environment, meeting the people and building a relationship with the people is how you learn.
Right, right. And that's definitely important. So the question that I have for you now, okay, so you went to Egypt, and when did participation in sports transform into playing, from playing to teaching? When did you get that awakening?
I was in Scandinavia. We were doing a tour for track and field, and that my role was always like the leader, the captain, and, you know, during the time we traveled, athletes would come up to me and say, "Hey, did you see me run? I ran really poorly today. Did you? I mean, I was just wondering if you saw me." I said, "Oh yeah, I saw you, and this happened. You came out of your dig phase too early. You stood straight up, or whatever, right? I was jumping today. Did you see me? Yeah, your steps were way off, right?" You should have just kept going run-throughs until you got a very positive mark, and then we could have made adjustments, but you never did that. So I was that guy that the athletes would come to. So after that 1 year, we finished the tour. One of the athletes came up to me on our goodbyes, and he said, "Hey, can I ask you a question?" And I said, "Yeah, sure, shoot." He said, "You seem like you love track, like you love participating." But I don't know. It seems like you love helping everybody else even more. So I got a question for you. Would you rather be a king or a kingmaker? And at the time, I kind of laughed it off like, hey, or whatever, because it didn't really hit me in my spirit. And as I traveled back home, by the time I got back to California, I went, wow, I would much rather be a kingmaker because I could do that for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And that's when I made the leap into just being that guy that was just going to help.
Kingmaker Thomas Weatherspoon is on the Texas Race today. You out there listening, it's just profound. I mean, I have to tell you, I won't even lie, as I was trying to keep up with you with your vast knowledge of, you know, Egypt and those places over there, you've given me a lot to Google after this show, so I just have to say, you're just one amazing man, I got to tell you. So who was the professional, you're welcome. So who was the first professional athlete that you worked with?
It was a football player by the name of Junior Taulatasi, and I'm gonna tell you this story because this is what I mean about being divinely guided. I was in college and we were training for the 1984 Olympic trials, and my roommate at the time was a gentleman by the name of Terry Porter, who went on to be a NBA All-Star for like 17 years for the Portland Trailblazers and then like the Miami Heat, and I think maybe the Spurs too. But anyway, Terry had a successful career in the NBA. But during that time for the Olympic trials, tearing a hamstring, and then Terry ended up getting chicken pox. So we had to come back home, and we're just sitting in the room, discussed it with ourselves, right? Well, I didn't know what to do after then because I was so driven and focused going in one direction, it was taken away from me. I went into a deep depression in a very low place, and it took a great deal for me to come out of that. So when I went to California, I was focused on doing some other things and trying to make a move in some other directions, and it just didn't work for me. I was going to go get a job in corporate America. I did that, and I was going to put on a suit and tie every day, and that was wonderful for like the first couple of months, and then the tie got thick around my neck, and I couldn't stand going to work every day, even though I was doing really well and making really good money. And my spirit was like, this is not the path. So I quit my job. I just walked in and I was done. And I went home and I felt fantastic about it. And then the next day when I woke up, I felt really stupid because I'm from the Midwest. And you don't quit a job without having a job. And where are you going to get your benefits? I heard all of my parents' fears in my head that morning when I woke up. And I didn't know what to do, so I got up and I went to the track, and I just did a workout because that was my routine for so many years. So I did the workout, and when I was done, I was stretching on the ground, and I looked up to the sky, and I said, God, what do I do now? I'm lost because I don't know what to do. I can't run right now. My hamstring's messed up. What do I do? And my voice said, do what you love, and the money will follow. And I actually got up and said, oh, that's real cute, but the only thing I love to do I can't do right now. So I'm walking off the track. I'm kind of disappointed. I'm walking off the track, and this kid came up to me and said, oh, excuse me, can I ask you a question? I said, sure, what do you need? He said, you look like you know what you're doing, and I'm trying to just get faster in the 40. And I said, well, what do you do? He said, well, I'm a football player. I'm a running back. I play for the University of Washington, and I'm trying to go to the combine for the NFL, and I don't know what I'm doing. And I said, well, let me take a look at you. And since I didn't have anything to do, every day I showed up at the track at the same time, and every day he showed up. And after a couple of weeks, he told a whole bunch of people, because he got faster. He got very much faster. And he told a bunch of his friends, and they showed up. And the next thing you know, I had a whole NFL camp going on. I mean, these guys weren't paying me anything because they didn't have money, and I didn't know what I was this was going to form into a business. So sometimes they just brought me lunch. Right? Or they took me to lunch. Sometimes they would put their monies together and give me $35-$40. But I showed up every single day out of my work ethic because I was taught that 90% of it is showing up. So I showed up every single day. Junior Taulatasi went on to get drafted in the 12th round of the draft because they had a lot of rounds back then. In the 12th round of the draft, he went to Philadelphia. And his rookie year, he became the starting running back at Philadelphia. He was the second fastest guy on the team.
Wow.
And that's how it all started.
That's how it all started. So, you know what, as I sit here with chill bumps all over, you know, here you are, you were hurt, you know, you looked up at all of your parents' fears were in your head. You went to the track, worked out, looked up to the sky, you know, said, you know, what do I do? And a voice said, do what you do and the money will follow. So how, like you said, the young people didn't have a lot of money. But what they did was they did make the effort to try to compensate your efforts, you know, for showing them the way. So at what point did it really start to become a lucrative experience for you?
You know, not the really magical thing is it wasn't too long after that. And, you know, after that started, I stayed in it. I didn't go get another job. I stayed on that field. I stayed working with those kids. I stayed creating, you know, this family, this PEPA family, this PEPA family, which means professional, means performance enhancement for professional athletes. I stayed in this family type situation since. It lasted for 30 years before I got up and moved someplace else. And
amazing.
Within the first, within a year, I was making a living. Within a year, I was making a living. Within 10 years, I was well-known all across the country, right? And in another 5 years, I was well-known around the world.
Wow. If you're listening out there right now, I'm talking to Thomas Weatherspoon of PEPA Sports Incorporated. It is a fascinating story. Hopefully, if you've missed the first part, you will go back to find out the wonder of God and the wonder of positive thinking and faith. I mean, that's one thing that I have heard throughout this entire time is faith and an understanding of finding out what your own personal truth is. So the question that I have for you, what are some of the messages you say to the athletes that help them gain your trust? I think you touched base on it with the young man who wouldn't told everybody about how fast he has become. What are some of the common things that you will tell someone as you're building a relationship with an athlete?
One of our signature things, philosophies, is when each athlete comes to the door, we used to have a sign that actually said, we don't build heart. You need to bring through the door with you. We don't build heart. That was God's job. So when you were created, when you were being conceived and those imaginal cells formed, those eight imaginal cells formed, they form a circle, and then in empty space, the first organ that's created is your heart from empty space. Now that heart that you have is your direct link to the absolute power. That's where you get your intuition. That's how that energy and that frequency and vibration, that's how it speaks to you, is through your heart. Your heart has never lied to you. It has never been wrong, ever. Your heart sends more messages to your brain than the other way around. Your heart actually has brain cells in it. So we move to live, to work, to strive from our heart, not our mind. See, in this country we live in, we became very rational. It's about how much education you have. Education is a good thing because the more information you have, the broader, bigger, bolder your imagination can be. But the wisdom comes from your heart. And you can read all the books in the world. That's what I tell everyone. You can read all the books in the world. You're not really going to teach God anything. Sorry. So if that absolute wisdom is inside of you, and you're not taking advantage of it, something's wrong. And it's easy to prove. It's easy to prove. We find ourselves doing it every day. We're looking for a store or something. We're looking for a place we got to go to. We're driving in our car. We come to a stop sign. Our voice says, go right. And then rationally, we start thinking about it. Well, maybe not right. I swear I think it was left. And I think the direction, okay, yeah, I'm thinking left. And you go left. You realize it's not left. You turn around. It's a block away if you had made the right. And you say, man, I should have followed my first mind. That was your intuitive voice that told you to go right. But you didn't believe it because you're smart. So
you
worked it out
in
your head.
You know, One thing that I do honestly believe, I remember when I worked my career at AT&T, they used to always quote Vince Lombardi. So he was a football coach, but he was very philosophical. So I know that much of your spiritual journeys and your tracks through Egypt and, you know, your own personal philosophies, which you developed by actually seeing and experiencing things. But was there someone that you admired in professional sports that kind of, like, tagged on to what your own beliefs were?
No. My heroes in sports are my brothers.
All right.
My mentor was my older brother. He was one of the best football players I've ever seen, ever. And he didn't go on to play pro. He left it after college. He wanted to be English teacher, you know, but he was an All-American football player. I've trained, you know, lots of the superstars in the NFL. I've never seen anybody like him, not to this day. The closest thing I've ever seen to him was like Barry Sanders. That was the closest. But he was my mentor. So I learned from him. I watched him. And what I learned from him is he had a way about him that he never took anything too serious. He was the most balanced kid I ever met, right, mm-hmm. coming up. He never swayed one way or the other. He was even keel. I didn't meet another athlete that even keel till I trained Marcus Trufant, who was a cornerback, went top. I think he was the 11th pick in the draft that year, went on to Seattle, had a stellar career. But he had the same, never too much to the left, never too much to the right. He was always even keel, and he was always in joy. Always in joy. So I learned a great deal from, we're always in joy. See, the only joy, like we say, joy and happiness are the attributes of peace. So you're only going to feel joy and happiness if you're at peace. Mm-hmm. And we have to realize when I'm training, I have to tell athletes, teach athletes, that rest is just as important as training. Mm-hmm. See, if you just go out all day busting your butt, you're tearing your body down, you're never allowing it to recover. And you don't understand the power of peace, bringing your body into that alignment of peace, because before there was anything ever created, there was this consciousness that was just a great state of peace, because there was nothing created. No atoms, no genes, no waves, no particles, nothing, no space. So at our base nature, I mean, at the foundation of all human beings is this conscious peace. So you, when you're in your peaceful mode, you're in alignment. Things are popping and wiggling. You feel good. When you get out of being at peace, you're struggling, you know, because you're no longer in alignment. So you got to. So we're constantly trying to reach for peace. I mean, we will bust our butt all year long on a job just to take 2 week vacation to feel peace.
That's okay. Profound. You know, that's profound. When I was talking to Erica Gleffing, your publisher with Happy Publishing, and she is really big on happiness and the spiritual existence of being here as a human being. And so the question that I have for you is that especially with all the people that you know, are there ever people that you encounter that has such a negative energy that you have to walk away to protect your own and preserve your own?
Oh, yes. It's happened lots. I sat at a table with superstars, you know, guys who have huge names, and got the worst vibe off of them after sitting down and having dinner with them, and just would tell their agent, no, thank you. I'm not interested. Because the way I raised my created my business, I created it as one huge family, right? So the way I was able to get these kids to produce at a very high level really quickly is I never separated anybody. So Aaron Rodgers trained right alongside a 10-year-old kid who was training for soccer. You know what I mean? These kids would look up to these idols, and they would grow up immediately. And parents would come to me and say, how did you make an impact on my kid in 3 days? I said, it's not really me. It's the environment they're coming up in. The expectation in this environment is so high that anybody who walks in here is going to succeed at a greater level. And I would only do business with people who had the mindset and the heart to be able to do that. Like Aaron didn't have a problem, and he would turn around and, you know, help a little kid up and teach a little kid, and that's what I was looking for. I was looking for that kind of environment with those kind of human beings.
I think that concept is fantastic. I don't know that I've ever seen it before in my lifetime. I know that that there are players in the NFL and in the NBA and baseball that will actually go back and help the children, but I've never seen the training of them side by side. So is this your concept totally, or is this something that you discovered through trial and error?
This is my concept totally, because when I started this, I started in like 85. And there were very few people in the country actually even training athletes at that time, right? But my concept was I came up in a family, right? And I knew the power of family. So I wanted to instill that in the kids that we work with. We created a nonprofit organization called Seeds of Promise for the kids who couldn't afford us. Our superstars, our pros who paid us, you know, more money, we would be able to bring in 10, 20 kids under their payments. You know what I mean? And so we got to bring kids off the street. We got at-risk children. We started doing summer camps. We made one huge family. And these kids, I mean, I got kids who came out from high school, befriended like Charles Woodson and one of the training, and then went on to become pro wide receivers in the NFL. And a large part of that was the relationship they built with a pro who helped them every summer or helped them in camp.
Mm-hmm.
Their expectation was, I'm going to be a pro just like my mentor. And they became pros.
Mm. You know, would you say that it's almost like the concept of paying it forward? Do you believe it's something like that, to where you get to keep what you have as far as your abilities when you actually give it back to someone else? And I heard out of there.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it's because you are falling into one of the reasons that it works so successfully is because you are using a natural law. You know, you're using an absolute law that there is no lack in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing but abundance in the universe. So anybody who pays it forward or gives it away freely is open to the fact that that energy is coming right back to them. That most people who don't do that, right, they're scared they're going to lose something. They hold on to their energy and their money because they're afraid they're going to lose something, because they don't think there's enough in the world. And because they got theirs, you know, somebody else had to suffer because they got theirs. And that's a misconception in the universe. And the universe teaches you that every single day. It's all abundance. Look around you. There isn't just one tree in the world, right? One type of squirrel, you know, one type of plant. There's nothing but abundance in the universe, because that's what the universe is. Abundance.
Wow. And how much, I like how you, I will enjoy this for months and years to come. The natural law, there is no lack of abundance in the universe. How profound is that? So how much does arrogance affect performance in your perspective?
Well, there's a thin line between confident, cocky, and arrogant. Right, arrogant will screw up everything. Arrogant, with the greatest athletes, the greatest physical, you know, athletic performers, arrogance, all-out arrogance, will screw up everything, because it stops energy from coming back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you put things out in the universe, and then you have an arrogant manner about you, and when the universe tries to give the energy back to you, the energy that you're now pushing out is blocking that returning energy. Let's say you have a desire for something, and then you put on a stern, I'm all that, ain't nobody better than me, boom, boom, boom. The energy that you asked for comes back to you and gets repelled by the energy you are now kicking out.
All right.
And you make it harder for yourself.
You know, when I think of that, I think the poster child for that I know, now I'm not an avid sports follower, but I've been following it for the most part. The poster child for arrogance for me is Terrell Owens. I mean, he was somebody that was great, but his
arrogance broke him. You know, the athletes who grow up believing that they created this whole thing, you know, that's a level of arrogance that we talk about whenever they come into camp, that they created this. I'm like, look, don't try to rewrite what's already been. You're not the first superstar the world's ever seen. Stop acting like it. A level of humility, right, and gratitude is more powerful than any confident force you think you can put out. Humility and gratitude.
And gratitude. Well, you know what? The switchboard lit up right about now. We're going to come back and talk about your PEPA Sports, Inc., and when you founded that. But do you feel like taking a couple of calls from one of the callers that have called in?
Oh, sure. No problem.
All right, let's go ahead and do it. Okay, 661-748, you are on with Thomas Weatherspoon. Do you have a question?
Hello?
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 You're on with GD and Thomas Weatherspoon. Do you have a question?
Yes.
Okay, and what is your question?
Do you want to know what the bell buying business is all about?
The who?
Do you want to know what the...
Let's go move to another caller. Sorry about that. Okay, 678-536, you are on with Thomas Weatherspoon of PEPA Sports. Do you have a question?
Oh, no, it was actually really good last night.
Wow, yeah. People are shy. I don't think that person is going to get it. Let's try one more, and then we'll go back. 925-584, you are on with Thomas Weatherspoon of PEPA Sports, Inc. and GD. Do you have a question? Wow, people are just listening today, so I guess you have a captive audience here. Yeah, so let's talk about your PEPA Sports. When was it founded, and can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, Performance Enhancement for Professional Athletes was the name I came up with for the work that we did. Because at the time, you know, there was nothing out there to follow, no guideline to follow. So I didn't want the world to see me as just a trainer, because there was more to it than that. I didn't want people to see me just as a speed guy, because we did incredible things with developing people's speed. And that's what got a lot of our players paid early, right? So everybody, oh, he's a great speed guy. I was an all-around trainer, but what I was trying to do was enhance the performance of anybody who came to me, be it an athlete or a celebrity or a business person. It didn't matter. So I didn't form the title Performance Enhancement, and I was one of the first people in the country ever to use it. Now it's common everywhere. But that was in, like, 1986.
Wow. So you've been around a while. So how did you come up with the 19 principles of transformation? I think I might know the answer, but I want you to say it.
Well, that was just simply watching each athlete, you know, and watching how successful athletes, how they were able to be successful, and looking for that common denominator in their success, right? So working with LeBron James, I watched and saw this. Working with Aaron Rodgers, I watched and saw this. Working with Michael Gilchrist, I watched and saw this. You know, working with J.R. Smith, I watched and saw this. Working with Andre Ward, the boxer, I watched and saw this. And I started taking notes. And then I formed it into 19 principles that started from desire, not a goal. Desire. Most people think they have to start with a goal. If you don't have the desire, and we call desires intuitively inspired ideas that come from your intuition and your heart. I would not go after a goal that was not inspired by my intuition, because it's just a job then, right? But something that is intuitively inspired, right, it just has to be. So you will do everything you have to make that happen, because an intuitively inspired idea has to come into fruition. Mm. So you have to first start with a desire.
Okay.
And then the 19th principle ends in peace, because that's the goal, to find peace about everything you do, because that's when you're in alignment with your absolute power. That's when you can actually use this magic we call spirit.
Mm. Every time you say peace, I get chill bumps, because your conviction is there. I honestly believe you. Hell, I want to go through one of your training sessions, and I haven't been working out in years. So I just have to tell you, I could see how people grow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, We start our retreats in the fall. We come in for a week of, like, we do these retreats where people come in from all walks of life just to get to that point where they can actually physically experience that spiritual realm to themselves in that peaceful state and recognize the power of the magic that comes from it. See, our most powerful attribute is peace. It's not force. But when we walk, we live in a society, right, an industrial society where people are out here trying to make money and get things done, right? We're work minded. But the truth of the matter is our real power is in our peace, is in being still, right? Because when you're still, you come to recognize your small intuitive voice, and you come to recognize that magical aspect of self.
Wow. And so is this training ground you talked about, I could listen to you talk all day. The retreats that you talk about, I can. I mean, honestly, you know, what you're putting out into the universe is just powerful and definitely propelled by peace that you talk about. And I'm an avid believer of peace. Now, when you're talking about your retreats, do these happen at your training ground facility here in the East Bay?
No, they happen in different hotels around the world. You know, my business manager, Ann Manette, you know, she comes up with some great places for us to do wonderful things. And for me, it was really important to do that because travel is probably my favorite thing. You know, what I would spend all my money doing, you know, the thing I love to do most is travel. And by doing it this way, I get to see different parts of the world, right? And I get to work and connect with people and do what I love to do, but we tie it all together. We've done them in Senegal, Jamaica, Bahamas, Barbados, Hawaii, you know. So we've had quite a nice run.
Wow, it sounds like a nice run. And so you're a global spirit. So how are the retreats promoted? I mean, how do people find out about them? And you talk about people from all walks of life actually attending them. So how, if somebody is listening today and they want to participate, how would they know where to find them?
Well, I believe the post for the fall schedule goes up in 2 weeks on thomaswetherspoon.com. They can reach us by Facebook at Thomas Weatherspoon on Facebook. We have Pepper Sports Training on Facebook, Path to Magic on Facebook, and just my personal Thomas Weatherspoon on Facebook. Or they can just go to thomasweatherspoon.com, right? And they can also go to pathtomagic.com. So, because what we do is we do online courses, and that's how we meet and get in touch with people from all over the world. We last year did an online course that lasted for a whole year. And that's the book, the next book that Erica is publishing for me that we're doing is called Divine Peace and Purpose, and that book came out of that actual 12-month course.
Wow. And so online courses. So you gave all of the websites. So for whoever who is out there looking for a spiritual journey or to heighten their existence here, you need to check it out. It's some good stuff here. So let's talk about your training ground, the facility. So did you build that from the ground up, or are you leasing a place, or where is it located?
Yeah, what we did was we took over a warehouse, and we turned a warehouse into a playground for adults or athletes. So when you walked in, it actually looked like a playground. There wasn't a great deal of weights involved, right? Because I work on developing athleticism versus muscle development. I mean, you know, building muscles. Because, you know, a lot of guys go in the gym and they just lift weights, but that doesn't translate into you being a better athlete anywhere. You may be a little stronger, but you're not a little faster. You're not more explosive. So we work on athleticism, on developing athleticism.
Mm-hmm. And so is that a public facility where anybody can go visit, or is it by invitation only?
No, it was a public facility. I mean, but we always did business by word of mouth. You know, we never did any real advertising, because once this ball started rolling, it took on a life of its own.
Mm-hmm. And so is it still here with us in the East Bay?
No, we're now in a move to Wisconsin.
Oh, wow, Wisconsin.
I moved back. Well, what we do is we do camps in southern L.A., right, July. We're getting ready to go back to Southern California the last 2 weeks of July. We do camps now in the Bay Area. My younger brother, the Olympic gold medalist I was telling you about, he stayed, and so We do training programs through his program. He's got a program in where is he now? In Pinole, California, right? Mm-hmm. In the East Bay, Signature Athletics. And so we travel a lot now. You know, we're on the move a lot.
Now, I know we talked about your brother and that whole Olympic experience. What's your brother's name?
Kenny Harrison. He's still the Olympic record holder. Still the Olympic record holder and the American record holder at 59.4 1/4. I think he now has probably one of two of the oldest records in the Olympics.
Wow, that's amazing. And so the question that I have, you attended the Atlanta Olympics with your brother?
Yes, yes.
What was that experience like?
Otherworldly. I mean, there's only two sports that ever reach that stage, and that's, you know, the World Cup soccer program and the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when the whole world is watching, when there's 100,000 people in the stadium all going crazy for you, but you know almost a billion people are tuned in to seeing what you're doing, right? That's a whole nother level. And then when you actually become the best, when you break the records, when you're standing on top of that podium, you're the best on the planet at what you do. You just became a god in your sport.
Wow.
When they can say, well, that's the best guy that's alive, that's the best guy on this planet, yeah, it's a different level of accomplishment.
Definitely.
Yeah, a different level. Like my client Andre Ward, who's now pound for pound, the second best fighter in the world. Undefeated, Olympic gold medalist in 2004, right? 168
mm-hmm.
pound. You know, I think he moved to 176, you know. But you see him on the bottom. Now he's doing a lot of announcing and commentating because he's so popular in the sport. He's such a strong, God-fearing little kid. It's amazing to watch him. I mean, he's a grown man now, but it's been amazing to watch him grow up and become that guy. But he's on that level. When you can say you're the best in the world at what you do, you know, you became the god of your endeavor.
Amazing, amazing. So what I want to do is we're winding down with some final questions here for you today. Those who have tuned in, you are listening to Thomas Weatherspoon, who is a professional trainer. And he's with PETA Sports, Inc., so he's doing a lot of incredible things in the universe. If you missed part of the interview, definitely go back and listen to the recorded session so that you could hear just how amazing this man is today. So now you talked about your books right now. I went on Lulu because that's where I self-published that, was Lulu. But now you're with Happy Publishing. Where can your books be purchased?
Well, the books can be purchased on Amazon, I think, most of them Barnes & Noble, and iTunes, I believe, as well. Because the Path to Magic book is an e-book now, out in e-book form. And now we have another book getting ready to be released, which was the collaboration, the first project I did with Happy Publishing, right? And I think that book will be out in like 2 weeks.
All right. Well,
so that will be Amazon as well.
Definitely go out and purchase these books. If you want to change your life, it starts by taking the first step and thinking outside of the box. Tomas went all over to Egypt and around the globe to actually find his own truth. So if you're listening to this, hopefully you're getting something out of it. This is why I like bringing incredible people to A Touch of Grace, so that it can inspire you. Tomas, what is next for you?
Oh, well, business-wise, there are a couple of things we're going to do. We're going to do we're coming out with a training book, and not an actual athletic training book, but more of a spiritually motivational book for the athletes, the mental and the spiritual preparation for the game. That's the next project we're doing. There's a company we just started called Boxcotch. It's a form of training that I created and developed that I've been using for years, and so we're getting ready to launch that. And I think down the line for the next year, we're going to start putting out some of the things that I created or invented or developed training-wise, right, and start actually working and producing in that industry as well. But now what we're doing is, like I said, the retreats. I'm speaking more, lecturing more, you know, writing more. So there are a lot of things on the horizon and that keep us constantly busy, and I am always, always working with somebody. I'm getting ready to leave this interview and go into a training session with a couple of collegiate and high school kids who are preparing for the next level.
All right. It sounds fantastic. You're doing incredible work. And you've just been interviewed here on The Touch of Grace. So the question I have, what's the best Blog Talk radio show on the net?
Touch of Grace. GD's
All
Touch
right.
of Grace.
All right, Thomas. Well, I have to tell you right now, you have been an incredible inspiration here today for myself as well as the listeners. And if you ever need exposure, not that you would need my little bitty help, but if you ever want to come back to A Touch of Grace, we've got your back, so you just say the word, okay?
I appreciate it. I'm honored. Thank you, JD.
All right. Well, you have a wonderful afternoon. Keep inspiring people. You are fantastic.
Thank you. All right, gentlemen, let's go.
All right. You take care. All right. That is just, I have to tell you right now, I'm going to enjoy going back listening to this show. So much of the time, I'm actually concentrating on the pace, making sure I'm listening, making sure I'm asking the right questions. I'm going to get a lot out of what I learned here today from Thomas Weatherspoon of PETA Sports, Inc. He's a phenomenal talent. And I just have to say there's some upcoming shows coming up. It's Independence Week, and here on A Touch of Grace, we've got a few firecrackers that will be coming to the show. So on Saturday the 5th, Pete DiLorenzo, star of Stage and Screen, will discuss his humanitarianism and more, and also, too, the Global Cooperation Day in 2014. That's going to be happening in October. So it's going to be another fun-filled, an inspirational hour with Pete DiLorenzo, so definitely tune in. It's going to be a huge show. There are like several thousand people who have already been invited to listen in, and Pete is definitely a talker, so it's going to be a wonderful show. Finally, on Sunday the 6th, Rico Casanova, African-American music entertainment historian, stops by to discuss his The Pros legacy. Rico is another phenomenal human being. I mean, I looked at these websites that Rico got. I mean, if you want to know anything about any African-American star, their birthday, whatever, if you want to know about who is African-American and are in the movies, you definitely go visit his sites because he's got some history for you. So Summer 24 in 2014 is in full effect here on A Touch of Grace. Special thanks go out to grand supporters of A Touch of Grace, George Livingston, celebrity photographer, Snowman, celebrity security and former bodyguard for James Brown for over 20 years, and also my friends over at World Media who have been a phenomenal support for A Touch of Grace. And last but certainly not least, the sponsor of this show, Lewis Randy Rand Wilkerson, the inspiring man behind Coffee with God by Randy Rand. If you haven't checked out his wisdom, Google him and get to know him. He's really a fabulous human being. In the words of the late wise Maya Angelou, always remember this: when someone shows you who they are the first time, believe them. And I've got a little treat for you. This is one of Thomas Weatherspoon's favorite songs. I played it during the broadcast with Erica Glessing, publisher, yesterday, and it's called Nobody Greater Than You by Vashon Mitchell. So thanks for tuning in, making us 40,000 strong. Stay strong, love yourself, and know that GD loves you.
The highest mountain, looked all around, couldn't find nobody. Went down into the deepest valley, looked all around down there, couldn't find nobody. I went across the deep blue sea, couldn't find one to compare to your grace, your love, your mercy. Nobody greater, nobody greater than you. pushed all over, couldn't find nobody. I looked high and low, still couldn't find nobody. Nobody greater, nobody greater, no, nobody greater than you. Nobody can heal like you can. Oh, most holy one, you are the great I am. Awesome in all your ways, and mighty is your hand. You are he who carried out redemption's plan. You are he who carried out. Nobody great, body greater, Jesus. Nobody greater than you. Nobody greater. Nobody greater, Jesus. Nobody greater than you.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace,
A Touch of Grace.
Literary Magic,
A Touch of Grace.
On Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.